our roommate got killed in a car accident, and it was hard on us, and they treated it like it was nothing. You need to pray, you need to believe in God. This is God's plan. They told me that she was too good for this earth, and that, you know, that's why she wasn't here anymore.
Did you have communication with your mom?
Kind of, I did, but they didn't think that my family was a good influence on me. So they didn't want me to talk to them. And I listened to this other podcast recently, like I think it's called Culty or something. And one of the people that was talking about it went to a different master's commission and he said the same thing. He was like, everyone asked me and he was like, I didn't know what I was gonna, and I was like, neither did I. And you feel really stupid. And I remember one night it was like chapel or whatever, and there's an altar call, you know, and they're telling you, you need to come give your life to Christ, and just pressuring these kids. And I felt like it was so disgusting, and watching these kids like sobbing and telling their darkest secrets. But like, that was the moment where I knew I could not do this anymore. I couldn't. How much damage did I do to the people who were underneath me? How many people are sitting in a room right now talking about what I did to them, you know? And that's rough.
It still hits, I don't miss. I just go, 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 like a go, go flow. And I'm almost done, and I told y'all so. When I throw these flows, like a stroke shimbo. And I ain't too close, it's your smoke goes. And I'm on my grind, that is all the time. I do not do breaks, that's right, I stay in dry. And look, I'm back with a little bit of that. A little more cash than I came in with. Ready, that cat is out that bag. But I still ask, the boy got skills. I don't need her, I don't need him. I don't need help with me, I got this. I can sing songs, I can spit raps. And I can do both, even do this, word.
Support for the On the Stacks podcast comes from Montage Planning Partners. Partnerships like this make our community a better place to live and work. That's why Montage Planning Partners is proud to support the important work of On the Stacks. When it comes to financial planning, most financial companies ask, what's your salary? At Montage Planning Partners, we ask, what's your story? We know building the right financial plan means looking at more than just money. That's why we start by asking the right questions, listening to what matters most to you, then guiding you every step of the way to help you live the life you want. Now and years from now. Plan your financial story with Montage Planning Partners with Northwestern Mutual, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Contact Montage Planning Partners today. Visit montageplanningpartners.com for further information and disclosures. This episode is brought to you by Sweat Tent, the pioneers of the portable wood-burning sauna. Did you know that using the sauna 3 to 4 times per week could reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease by up to 50% and make you 60% less likely to experience Alzheimer's disease? That's why I've been a big fan of the sauna for years. But having to go to a crowded gym to do it isn't ideal. And all the at-home options are bulky and expensive. That's why I only use the Sweat Tent for my sauna needs. It's the most storable and affordable wood-burning sauna on the market. It not only takes minutes to set up, but it can reach 200 degrees Fahrenheit in 30 minutes or less. So whether you're enjoying it yourself in your backyard, with friends, or in need of a reliable sauna on the go, Sweat Tent is your best choice for the most portable, storable, and enjoyable outdoor sauna experience. All On the Stacks listeners will receive $100 off when you use code OTS. Visit sweattent.com today to get $100 off your purchase with code OTS at checkout. Again, that's sweattent.com to get $100 off with code OTS. Sweat Tent, helping you fire up your home wellness routine. This episode is brought to you by FitAF. If you haven't already noticed, I live and breathe entrepreneurship. Whether it's launching new ventures, attending pitch meetings, or mentoring budding entrepreneurs, my schedule is jam-packed. And that's where FitAF steps in. Their menu changes weekly, offering a variety of chef-inspired meals designed by nutrition experts using only the best quality ingredients, keeping me fueled and focused. Their vast selection of meals has you covered for all types of dietary restrictions and diet plans, including keto, paleo, vegetarian, vegan, gluten-free, and more. As an On the Stacks listener, enjoy our exclusive offer. Get 20% off your first order of 7 meals or more when you use code OTS at checkout at FitAFNutrition.com. Again, that's code OTS for 20% off your first order of 7 meals or more at FitAFNutrition.com. Healthy meals and seamless nutrition, keeping entrepreneurs at the top of their game. What's up, podcast? I'm your host, Bill Corcoran Jr. here in the MPP studio. Amber Viola, welcome to the On the Stacks podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to have you here for a lot of reasons. Number one, your hair is on point. That's number one. That's number one. But number two... is, you know, when you filled out, you know, the questionnaire to be on the show, I appreciate, you know, how open
you were about a lot of things. And as you probably realize, as you're going through the thing, you're probably like, man, this is like really difficult. Like, why is there so many goddamn questions, right?
I was actually surprised with the questions.
Yeah, the point of it is, number one, you have quite the life resume. Very impressive. And I appreciate your honesty and openness, number one, because not a lot of people either are, or when they answer the questions, you know, you can kind of tell, like, people are like faking it, yeah, or whatever. And like, listen, like, everybody, you know, goes on podcasts for all different reasons. Everybody, of course, has their own selfish reason, and there's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, of course, I get a lot of people that I could tell just want to come on for the free advertising, yeah, whatever it is the hell, yeah, they do. And again, that's okay too. But on the flip side, it's like, all right, well, put forth a little effort to show like some value.
Or have someone to say.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Yeah, other than like, hey, I want to talk about my business.
Yeah.
Well, who the hell cares? Yeah, so.
Because
so
if you have a cool story, then I'm going to want to go look your business up.
Exactly. Yeah. So you get it. Yeah. You get it. Not a lot of people do. And you're also a podcaster, so we also have that in common.
Yes.
But, you know, one of the things on there, you know, a couple of the harder questions, you know, is like, one of them is like, is there, you know, regrets? And then other people say to me like, oh my God, like, just people just like, don't, I've actually had somebody one time be like, oh, I don't feel comfortable filling out this form. And I'm like, okay,
yeah,
well, sorry then. But then, you know, the three random interesting facts about you, I'm just going to read them if that's,
yeah, that's
okay,
fine.
Right? So, Family Guy is your favorite show. You love to sing, which, by the way, you actually gave me four. You gave me a bonus. I only asked for three, but Amber gave me four.
Wait, I felt like everybody who knows me knows I love Family Guy. So, like, mm-hmm, I was like, that one's really easy. So I started with that, and then I was like, okay.
Now we'll get into, like, some, yeah, of the, right? Yeah. Okay, so Family Guy was number one. Number two, I love to sing. Number three, you're the commander of American Legion Post 274. Mm-hmm. And the other one was, I was in a cult.
Yes.
And to be honest, like, that really caught my attention. Not that the rest didn't, but I recently, I don't know if you watched it, and if you haven't, you know, maybe it would be interest to you, or other people that I'm just, I'm a big documentary guy.
Yeah, me too.
I love documentaries.
So I probably watched it.
Probably. Okay, so Dancing for the Devil on, yes, Netflix. Okay, yeah, there you go. See? So if anyone hasn't seen it, I won't spoil it, but there's a documentary on Netflix called Dancing with the Devil. It's about these TikTok dancers that, you know, became trapped in this cult. And again, you know, that I won't ruin it, but, you know, this cult, you know, yeah, religion, and it was called 7M Management. Mm-hmm. And it just really took over their lives. And
it struck a chord. It definitely. Did you see the Hillsong one?
No.
So we were real Hillsong adjacent. Like, we sung a lot of Hillsong stuff. Mm. And I believe I went and saw them in concert while I was at this cult. And so that one really, like, I was like, dang.
So wait, this was another documentary?
Yeah.
What's it called?
It's the Hillsong.
Hillsong. I gotta write this down.
I don't think that's it. I can't remember what it's called, but it's, yeah, about the Hillsong Church in Australia.
Okay.
And we were really adjacent to them because we used a lot of their music in our production and everything like that and everything. Okay.
It was very similar.
It was. And, you know, I don't, like, online people have been really deconstructing a lot from religion, and I realized I never did that. After I left, I just left, and I was like, fuck that. And and that's it. And I moved on.
Wow.
And so seeing these different documentaries coming up about cults, about evangelicals, the, mm-hmm, rise of President Trump, seeing that, really, it's all the same vein.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you probably watched the one on Hulu then. I forget what it's called. It's God something, and it's with the evangelical from a Liberty University.
Yeah, I almost went to Liberty.
Did you?
Oh, yeah, wow. I did. You know why I didn't go? Because I went to college for a weekend when I was in 10th grade, and they told me there was no interracial dating.
Well, you went there to visit? Mm-hmm.
In Lynchburg, Virginia. Uh-huh. So that's number one. So I was already wrong.
Yeah. And what'd they say?
They told me there's no interracial dating.
And that was it?
You can now.
Oh, you could.
They changed the rule now. But then you could not. And I was like, that's racist, and what am I doing here?
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I'm just in general, you know, I mean, I'm fascinated by a lot of things, but, you know, as I said, like, I love documentaries, and, you know, I'm, of course, I like watching movies too, yeah, but nowadays I'm more into just stuff that's real and just, you know, learning, whether it's about history, mm-hmm, or just anything. Like, I'm pretty much any documentary, yeah, will pique my interest pretty much. Right. But like I said, I recently just watched that one and one other one. I can't remember the cult, but it was something back in like the, I forget what it was, in the 90s, where like that house, the house they ended up burning down, the house with the people in it.
I'm blanking out. Couldn't get out.
Yeah. Like, you know, unfortunately, you know, some people died, and you know, try not to ruin the story, even though that's kind of just did. But yeah, so I'm just kind of fascinated by it. And like I said, you have, you know, somewhat of a similar story with being in a cult, and mm-hmm. obviously, you know, I'd be interested in hearing like how did that happen for you? Because I know obviously you were in the Navy, mm-hmm. right?
So this was before.
Yes, the Navy.
Yes.
Okay. So, I would have guessed it was after.
No. This was before. So this was like after high school.
Okay.
And so I grew up evangelical. Obviously, I just said I was gonna go to Liberty, so that my track kind of was already to stick in that religious vein thing. And there's this saying in the evangelical church that it's when God puts these leaders in front of you and they're speaking for God, so you listen to them like they're God. That's your parents, that's your parents' friends, that's everybody else in the church, in your Christian school. You know, so a lot of my friends from high school had gone on to master's commission, which I'll explain what it is. I was going to college, and my mom was like, well, if I'm paying for you to go to school, you're going to go to this school. And a lot of people would think, well, you were in college, obviously you're 18. Why didn't you, you know, whatever? Well, what I just said, like, you have to do that, you know, and that's how you're kind of trained. So I thought it was going to be this. I knew it was this discipleship program where you're going to be like travel. I was going to get to sing. I was going to get to go places and like.
And you love to sing.
I love to sing and like tell people about God. But more, I wanted to go and travel and be around the world and meet new people and everything like that. So that's kind of what the vision that I had. And when I got there, it was just completely different. I mean, I'll tell you about the rules.
The rules. I can't wait to hear about the rules.
So when I first got there, my mom, you know, she drove me down. It was about a 13-hour drive from here to Rockford, Illinois. I would drive back and forth whenever I could. And I realized now.
So wait, how old were you?
I was 19, 20. Yeah, because I was before I was 21. So I would drive back and forth all the time to get away, and like look at it now, like, damn, I was willing to drive 13 hours just for like a 4-day. Like, obviously I was in the thick of it.
That's so intense.
Yeah. And you first get there and even down to what you wear. So like we had for women, we had to wear these things called safety shirts. So like I obviously could not wear this. You had to cover mm-hmm. your shoulders. And everything had to be like all the way up to here, and you had to wear something underneath that covered all the way down. So like if you bent over, you had another shirt underneath,
just in case. Yeah,
your shirt. You weren't allowed to go anywhere by yourself, so you always had to be in like.
I read that. Like, and you couldn't even be in the room, same room with like opposite sex,
no,
right? In the
no.
first, like they called it what,
yeah,
a first year,
first years, you
right?
You weren't allowed to date. You weren't allowed to have any close friends of the opposite sex either, or really friendships. So even if like you called me from home just to like, hey Amber, how are you? No. You couldn't listen to any secular music. Secular music is anything that's not Christian. So only Christian music, only PG movies, G movies. Passion of the Christ obviously was an exception because that's rated R. But if you wanted to watch a PG-13 movie, everybody's gonna judge you. And also like, why is it PG-13, you know? And it was a 9-month discipleship program where you're supposed to give your life to Christ for the whole time and really focus on a close relationship to him. And through this, you're working to the bone. I mean, they have you to where you're getting up in the morning. You got to go pray for an hour. After that, you have some type of class. Everything was segregated, male and female. So we had girls' class. And they teach you how to be, you know, a meek, humble. Amen. You know, I am brought here to serve. See, I got my fundy voice.
This is the voice. This is the cult voice.
Cult voice.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and you're taught how to be a wife. Not really taught how to be a mother, though, but like taught how to serve.
So wait. Before going into all this, like, I just went back for 1 second. Like, did you know, like going into this, like, did you know like it would be anything like this?
No, like
well, how was it portrayed to you
beforehand? I thought it would be more like Liberty, like Liberty's crazy, but I thought it'd be more Christian college. I was thinking more college-based, and that's what they really pushed and advertised. There was part of it where we got to do this curriculum where you study through the whole Bible. That was my favorite part.
Okay.
Which was, I learned some stuff. But no, I, like, all those rules and everything, like, I knew you couldn't date. And I was like, okay, fine. I go there for 9 months. I can't date. I can't talk to boys.
Yeah, sure. Whatever. Right. Yeah.
I can do that.
Yeah.
The music thing for me was the hardest thing because Christian music is not good. It's not good.
Yeah.
So.
Sorry, people.
Yeah, I'm really, really, really sorry. But.
Sorry, not sorry, actually.
So, no, I listened to this other podcast recently. Like, I think it's called Culty or something. And one of the people that was talking about it went to a different master's commission, and he said the same thing. He was like, everyone asked me, and he was like, I didn't know what I was going to, and I was like, neither did I. And you feel really stupid.
And you're young and you're maybe young. A little bit naive.
You're definitely
right?
naive.
And like, you're still obviously trying to, you know, find yourself. Like, hell, I mean, I'm 35 years old and I feel like I maybe just sort of really figured
it
out.
And the thing about it is now my previous co-host to Politics But Make a Fashion, she was there as well. And, you know, the regret that our parents have, you know, my mom feels so guilty about letting me go there and sending me there. And, you know, because we had this idea of what we thought it was going to be. And then it turns out, like, at one point she ended up crashing her car because she was getting no sleep. And I'll never forget, her dad was like, you know, cults don't let you sleep. And we were like, no, this is Jesus, you know, and everything. But he clocked it, you know, with the lack of sleep, lack of eating, you know, just working into the bone for free.
And you probably didn't get paid, right? Like,
you had to pay to be there. So I think it was about $6,000 a year. And then they would give you $20 a week because you couldn't work and you couldn't do anything. So that $20 a week had to go to food or whatever. So, yeah, just think about trying to survive on that. I had no money.
$20.
You know, $20. And I had $20. A car. So you're trying to figure out gas.
You can't even buy anything for $20.
No, you can't. You're trying to figure out how to do that. So literally, I mean, I just remember being so hungry sometimes. And then, of course, there's kids that, like, don't know how to budget and don't know. I had at least already had a year of college under me. So I was a little bit more
ahead of the game. Yeah.
But, I mean, you have kids that were homeschooled their whole life coming into this. This is their first time away from home. So much stuff was literally just a shit show. And there was no, you know, they're teaching you how to be a wife and how to find a husband, but, like, no, like, day to day how to do anything.
How to actually, like, be, like, a human being
in
society.
But then also they're teaching you to be afraid of people, you know, and if and this is something that is really in forefront now. People truly believe, and this is what they teach you, if you are not an evangelical Christian, you are immoral. And people will literally believe that you will rape and kill people just because you don't believe in God. So there is this fear of, like, everyone else. Well, what are they going to do to me if they're not? Like, can I even talk to them if they're not a Christian? Like, what do I say? What do I do? And I mean, most of the people there had nobody who was outside of their church that they knew or talked to.
It was just the inner circle. Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that was my problem, is I had friends who weren't Christian at all and they were good people. And that is what was tearing me apart, because you can't tell me these people are bad people and these are my ride or die. Like, you know what I mean? I've known these people my whole life, and some of y'all are terrible and you're Christians and you love God, you know? And they would pull you away from your family. They'd find some reason that your family was terrible or bad. And you know how in Scientology, well, I don't know if everybody knows how in Scientology, but you have to tell all your secrets. And then so it was like our first couple days there. And, you know, they want you to spill your guts.
Your whole life. They threw you the rules. They didn't even, like, break in. It was just
It was right then and there. And then if you don't, it's like, well, you're not being vulnerable. You need to be more vulnerable. You know, you need to, what is hindering you? Why are you being like this?
Like, what are you hiding?
What are you hiding? What do you have in there? Mm. You know? But then those things would be, you know, used against you and everything like that.
That's crazy.
Yeah, like, because, I mean, they'll ask you if you had sex before, because you couldn't have sex, obviously, you know, and all those things. And if you said yes, then now they're focusing on, well, you know, you're not allowed to date and everything, like, you know. And
now they're, like, zeroing in on you, like, yes. Hey, she might be a problem here.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So, like, did you know, like, obviously, it sounds like, you know, it sounds like I might already know the answer, but did you know kind of, like, right off the bat, like, oh, shit, this, there yes, might be something I wrong cried. Here. Like within those, with like immediately, like, you knew.
Cried, sobbed.
It's like, what'd you do?
I felt like it's what I had to do.
Why?
I felt like I knew I wanted to help people my whole life and I wanted to serve. I became a social worker. I didn't know how. And I thought that it was going to be through the church. And so I figured this was a good way to do it. My parents were paying for it. And I was like, well, let me at least try to get as much out of this as I can. But I was insanely miserable. I found my journal that I had from that time. And all the songs that you're singing.
You kept the journal?
Yeah.
Is it like you still have it?
I still have it.
Wow.
Yeah. If it wasn't the most depressing thing in the world, but I was cutting bad. I was so suicidal. Like everything in there is like, you know, I'm so worthless. God, please fill me up and make me better. There's this Bible verse that says, be perfect for I am perfect. That amount of pressure on you, like every single day, you're constantly going through like, okay, am I doing anything wrong? Okay, is anything showing? Am I okay? Like, you know, did I do anything wrong? People tell on you. And, you know, so then there's no privacy and there's no trust because no matter what you say or do, somebody can go back. Now you're in a meeting. Well, what happened? Well, what did you do? Well, why did you say that? You know, and the culture just was different too from the East Coast to Midwest. So certainly I would stand with my arms like this and that was a problem. You're closed off, you know. You're hard. You need to be softer. You need to, you know, do all of these things. And they just beat you down so much. I can't remember when somebody invited me to church or something a couple years back and just listening to the songs. And I was like, I would never want my daughter to sit here and sing that she's unworthy and that she's nothing. Like, I would never want her to sing that. And you're doing that over and over again. And your self-esteem is just nothing.
Yeah, you're beating you down.
They tell you don't, you know, you can't trust your inner voice, you know, because that could be the devil.
Wow.
So, you know, but they'd be like, but you need to listen for God. God will talk to you. And I'd be like, well, how do I know if God's talking to me or if it's just me talking? What if it's just me and I think it's God, but it's not God. It's just me. And now I'm really doing something. I'm falling like endless.
It's just an endless loop.
Yeah. And then, you know, you're just... And then you're working all the time. So, like, one of the things I did that I was there that I loved, hands down, it was we, right after Katrina, we did hurricane relief and Rita relief. 2 years in a row, we got to go down there. And I loved it. I loved being with the people, being able to serve, helping clean up and everything like that. But it just...
So you did, like, little mission trips like that?
Yeah, yeah. And that was great. But, I mean, you're working, like... I was so tired. You're not eating and you're not sleeping. You can't complain because you're a servant. You know, you're here to serve. And if you complain, you need to check yourself. Because why are you complaining? You know, why aren't you doing this joyfully? You have to joyfully serve.
As a servant, yeah.
Yeah. If you're sick, you need to find joy in that sickness.
That's insanity.
And if you're sick, this was for me. You have unchecked sin. You are sick because there's something not right in your life. There's something wrong in your heart, and that's why you're sick.
Did they ever tell you that?
Yes.
What'd you say? What'd you do in moments like that?
Cried, probably. Honestly, I would just shut down. I wouldn't even say anything because I knew no matter what I said, it would be wrong. Mm. You know, so
like you couldn't even like try to like fake. Well, I'm sure you probably did fake to get through shit, yes. Right?
You know, yeah. And... You put on
that was a good one.
That was, you know, good. That like you see people on. Remember the woman who spoke after the State of the Union?
Mm-hmm.
That is it right there. That is who you are supposed to be. If you look at me, you know, that is the opposite of what I just naturally am. So for me to try to just even physically fit into that,
it's just like impossible.
Impossible. I'm not small. So that first, like I have a body. And so those things were already, I'm loud. I laugh really loud. So, are you meek? Are you humble? Are you quiet? Are you modest? You know, you can't be prideful. But by then, prideful, it was like, that means I almost can't have a self-esteem because I can't believe that, like, because, oh, you're not good at that. God is making you good at that. You know,
so like you don't get any of the credit for anything.
You can't get any credit for anything. And if you wanted to, you were prideful, you know.
Wow. Were there like, and I know just again from watching enough, you know, documentaries on cults, like I you know, probably know a little bit more than I'll say like the average person, right? But not as much as you, but you know, like confiding in somebody else there, obviously, like was, you know, obviously you were afraid to do that because then, you know, again, as you said, people would tell on you, so you didn't know who you could trust. You could trust no one, right? But was there anyone like for you that you were able to?
I had my friend who I did do the podcast with because we had known each other since we were 4 years old already.
So,
anyway.
Did you guys go there together at the same time?
No, she went right after high school. I went to the U first.
Oh, okay.
Then I left the U and then.
And
I
so
went.
She was already probably a year in.
She was already a year in. And so then, she was a year ahead of me. Yeah.
Okay. And then you went.
Yes.
And joined with her.
Yeah.
Okay. So like.
I had a roommate who I loved and like.
Okay.
And she actually ended up leaving the program.
Like, did you know? Because I know, like, you have to kind of like escape, like in like secrecy.
I knew. They didn't know.
Okay.
And it was hard for her. And even just years later, her life, because like you can't have sex or anything. So if you break your vow, you know, it would just ruin people. And you feel like you have to get married. So then you get married. And you realize you married a crazy person.
And you can only marry somebody within the cult.
Once. And, you know, and so you now your life is this. And I just remember speaking to her and she was like, I should have never got married. And I only got married because I had sex and I felt bad. And they basically were like, you know, forced me out almost. And they shun you. You're not allowed to talk to them. And I said, I'm talking to her. She was my roommate. Like, but even throughout the whole time being there, I mean, people would tell her like, oh, I can't believe you talked to Amber. Like, oh, is she so like, I can't. And even the same thing. And it's just like, what, you know, and both of us would just be there. Cause she was a Southern Belle. I remember her dad worked for like Hostess. So he'd always send us Hostess care packages, which was like our lifesaver. Cause we were hungry. Okay. It was our lifesaver.
20 bucks. It's all you had.
And you know, and she was the sweetest thing. And she just could not understand why people were not kind, you know? And the way that she was even just treated by the end, and our roommate got killed in a car accident, and it was hard on us, and they treated it, like it was nothing. You need to pray, you need to believe in God. This is God's plan. They told me that she was too good for this earth, and that, you know, that's why she wasn't here anymore. So you're trying to get through and somebody's telling you that, and like somebody that you lived with and saw every single day, they're gone and are telling you, oh, she's in heaven with the angels. She's singing. Like, get fucked. Like, you know what I mean? And I'm still close to her family today. I love them. They are such beautiful, amazing people. But after that, like, we really, really had a hard time. And that's when she ended up kind of leaving. And they told me I wasn't allowed to talk to her anymore or anything like that and stuff. And so there, like, she was a person that I really felt like I could confide in and things. But honestly, for the most part, most people, like, you said anything and it would get turned around, twisted, and then now you're in trouble.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what about, like, did you have communication with your mom?
Kind of. I did, but they didn't think that my family was a good influence on me.
Right. Yeah.
So they didn't want me to talk to them.
So you had a phone, like, would you call, text, like?
Yeah, and at this point, my family also lived overseas. So when I would talk to them, it kind of be like at night, you know, the opposite time of things. But also, I was broke. I think I had a prepaid phone. I might have had like.
You had the burner phone under the mattress, huh?
Something. I can't remember what it was, but like I would kind of text because international. Texting call wasn't really a thing then. So I really didn't have good communication with them anyway. Oh, wow, I did have a laptop. And I think I was like one of the only people with a computer and stuff, which probably was a problem. But
you were a problem.
Were you? Problem.
Amber was the problem.
I was the problem. But no, because they thought they weren't good influence on me. And you're listening to these people and like you're believing them. You're with them 24/7. They're beating it in your head. You know,
brainwashed. Yeah. Truly brainwashed.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's wild. And even just talking about it, like, because so I've talked about this once. I started a podcast called My Culty College, and it was right after the Hillsong's documentary was coming out and people were talking about evangelicalism. There's a documentary about Liberty University about Jerry Falwell.
Yep, yep. Right? Yeah, that's the one. I just watched that one just literally a week ago.
Yes. So all those things were just bringing back floods of memories. And somebody posted on Facebook about Master's Commission. And when I read I knew then, I said, I was not the only one. Because I got kicked out, they told me I was bitter and angry, and that's why I didn't enjoy my experience. So I felt like I could never talk about it ever because I was one who was bitter. Looking through those comments and seeing and talking to people, especially during COVID, people got together over Zoom who hadn't seen each other in years, who used to be in like little groups together at Master's Commission, were talking and people were having these conversations, and it just opened up so many holes, like not even a wound, just holes. And I was like, I never dealt with this, I don't think at all. And I was like, I have to talk about it. But I told you yesterday that I was so nervous and scared. And when I tell you, even trying to get people to come on and talk about it with me, they won't.
Mm.
They won't.
Like people that are now out?
That are now out, they won't do it.
Why? Are they afraid of type of recourse?
Maybe. I mean, honestly, I'm ready for a cease and desist, you know, but.
Yeah, me too. I'm ready for it. We ain't stopping.
Or I had a friend who went on a podcast recently and talked about this 2 episodes, and she didn't name the name.
Mm.
And I said, and I was like, you know, we have to.
They're going to want me to take this show down.
We have to name abusers, right? We have to, like, you have to. Even now, still, I talk to people. I was texting a friend this morning who I'm still close with. She's out. She was there. And she's like, you've been waiting a long time to do this. And I was like, I'm terrified. But she hasn't come on and talked about me, you know, on mine. And it's this level of fear. And honestly, I don't know what it is all the way. My brother said it's because I still have guilt in there. I still have fundy guilt, you know, which is real. I remember I got divorced, and the amount of shame and guilt I felt about getting divorced was insane. And I never thought that and it all started coming up. And that was recent, 6 years, 2019. So like, that was recent. So I had so much guilt about not being able to be the wife and, you know, all this stuff. Now I'm divorced. Like, I'm a sinner. I'm divorced. And I was like, God, I'm not even like in this. I don't believe in that or whatever. And it's still in there.
It's still like eating at you.
It's still eating at you. Yeah. And it keeps you in such abusive
relationships. Those patterns. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So wait, so when you originally started your podcast, It was called what?
My Culty College.
Yeah.
I have two. So that's the second one. So that's the one I started about this Master's Commission. And I think I have a couple episodes on there, and I have other people telling their stories. I tell mine and I have other people. But so trying to reach out to people and talk to them and trying to get them to come on is just, it's hard. And when I tell you, I get instant tears from people, like instant. They're like, Amber, I'm already crying. I'm like, oh God, you know. Just messaging and talking and having them even talk about it. And some people have flat out said, I cannot talk about it.
Yeah,
I can't.
Well, I remember when we were, you know, messaging over the last couple of weeks or however long it's been since we scheduled this, you know, like I obviously asked like, hey, is it okay? Can we talk about this? Is this something you'd be open to discussing? And of course, you know, you said yes. But, you know, I think, you know, first of all, thank you, number one. And I think you're also going to help these other people by sharing this. So I applaud you for, you know, being vulnerable.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I know it's probably it's very difficult, right? I can't even imagine, you know, and again, like seeing some of these documentaries, it almost doesn't even seem like this stuff actually happens or goes on.
It doesn't.
But now that I'm sitting across the table from somebody who literally, you went through all this. After I just watched like literally three documentaries over the last like couple weeks or couple months, right, about this stuff, and now I'm sitting across the table from somebody who literally experienced
and
the
it's
same
embarrassing
thing.
It's embarrassing, like I really got sucked into this, and
you feel like an idiot, like oh my God, like it's like the ultimate
people talk about it like I would never get in,
yeah, like, or how'd you fall for that, like,
and then
like,
it doesn't start off big, it starts off little,
yeah, just, you know? They ease you in a little bit, a little bit at a time, right? Like,
yeah,
My gosh. So what was the turning point for you?
So I went back for a second year. I know, y'all. I know. And but so in between my first and second, I don't think my mom knows this, but they didn't want me to go home because they didn't think it was a good environment for me.
In between the first and the second year?
Yes.
Okay.
So I stayed in Illinois and I worked for the church. So Rockford First Assembly. Assemblies of God. I worked for the church over the summer and I got paid a little bit, but I think I worked off to pay for my second year.
Mm.
And I worked at a summer camp.
On the Stacks will be back in a flash after a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Elevation Wellness, NEPA's premier wellness center located on Mundy Street in Wilkes-Barre. From pro athletes to busy parents, Elevation Wellness is leading the conversation when it comes to bettering your health through integrative medicine. Founded by NEPA native Louis Helmecki, Elevation Wellness offers physician-formulated and guided treatments that are administered by registered nurses. To learn more about how you can experience the benefits of IV vitamin therapy, multivitamin booster shots, non-invasive aesthetics, or peptide, NAD, red light, and compression therapy, visit elevation-wellness.com or follow them on Instagram at elevationwellnessnepa. All On The Stacks listeners will receive 10% off their first purchase with code STACKS at checkout. Call 570-762-9400 or visit elevation-wellness.com to book your appointment today. Elevation Wellness, taking your health to new heights. This episode is brought to you by Burn, the fitness company behind the Today Show approved Burn Board. If I'm being honest, working out can be a real chore, especially as a new dad in desperate need of sleep and cardio. Burn is founded by NEPA native Jimmy T. Martin, and his Burn Board offers a low-impact core and cardio experience unlike anything I've done before. They have hundreds of on-demand workouts that are great for beginners, seasoned athletes, and out-of-shape podcast hosts who love supporting small businesses. My wife and I use it pretty frequently throughout the week, and it's honestly a great way to burn a ton of calories without burning a ton of cash. Not to mention, it's a great tool for skiers, runners, wrestlers, and hockey players. Jimmy is offering all On The Stacks listeners 15% off when they use the code STACKS15. Visit theburn.com today to get 15% off your purchase with code STACKS15 at checkout. Again, that's theburn, THEBRRN.com to get 15% off your purchase with code STACKS15. It's time to get on board today with Burn.
We drive the same roads you drive. We face the same danger you face. When you're involved in a car or a truck crash, it's personal. Because we live here and raise our families here. We're invested here.
To learn more, visit Anzalone Law Offices online at anzalonelaw.com. And now we're back On The Stacks.
And this summer camp, I was actually going to be getting paid for. I cannot remember the name of it, y'all, for the life of me. Probably because it was horrible. But I remember the first day at the camp having to go through the girls' bags and have them put their clothes on and basically tell them that they couldn't wear certain things. And I felt like a fucking piece of shit doing that. And making girls cover up, making them having to put t-shirts over their bathing suits, what I know is not safe for you to swim in. Because I had to swim like that. And one time I jumped in a pool with a t-shirt and it went over my head and I almost drowned. And I just felt so. And I remember one night it was like chapel or whatever. And, you know, like in music, there are rhythms and things that give you an emotional response. Ebbs and flows. Even if you listen to like Mariah Carey, you know, you start listening to a song, it makes you start tearing up. That is what they do with worship music, hill songs. And there's an altar call, you know, and they're telling you like, you know, you need to come give your life to Christ and all this stuff. And just pressuring these kids and just I felt like it was so disgusting. And watching these kids, like, sobbing and, like, you know, telling their darkest secrets. Like, well, what have you ever done? You know, well, I stole a candy bar. Like, you were 7. I don't care, you know. And I left the chapel. And I went and walked around. and I came to the second part of the camp that was a goddamn conversion therapy camp. And I said, I am so wrong. Like, this is... And I found out that they actually had a little conversion therapy at Master's Commission. There were people there who were coming to be healed from being gay. And you know those were my best friends that were there. And there were some that got kicked out. You know, some that are still trying to heal from everything that they went through. But that was the moment, even, and I know it sounds crazy because I still went back, but like that was the moment where I knew I could not do this anymore. I couldn't.
So what is that conversion therapy?
Oh my God. Okay. So like,
I know you just touched on it a little bit.
Yeah. So basically it's, shout out Jessica Rothschild, councilwoman from Scranton, PA, because they made it illegal in Scranton, which might seem like a very small thing, but it's a big deal because it's still legal a lot of places. But basically what they do is they're trying to convert you from being gay to being straight. And they use a whole bunch of different methods. Some methods are like visual stimulation, to where they'll make you watch certain things. And if you get aroused, they will shock you.
So like abuse, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll shock you, or like they'll associate bad images with bad feelings. So like a image of gay sex will be associated with pain, or like something that can like induce vomiting.
So basically it's like try to beat it out of you, essentially.
Different things. And there was like separate just therapy, like brainwashing therapy, to try to make you be straight and set up relationships for you. And you know, different. I mean, even some places will go as far as like have you have sex with someone just to not be gay, even though I just said you can't have sex, you can't do anything outside of marriage. And that, but
they would let you in those
certain situations
in like a controlled
environment, which obviously that does not sound sex. That's abuse and not consensual.
Right.
You know, and it was just really, really bad. And it wasn't something that they advertised. And I think since I was over there over the summer and I'm nosy and I was already ready to go, like I started to ask my friends who were gay questions like, oh, you guys have a whole separate little thing. Cause I remember like, where were you? Like, what are you doing?
And they were there
and they weren't allowed to really tell us or whatever and stuff. And I remember being like, oh, you guys have your own separate little like, oh, we're gay. Like, da, 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 or whatever, because I remember one guy was in it and he was like, I'm not, I know I wear skinny jeans, but like this is, I'm not, you know. But yeah, and I mean, it was just bad. A lot, like I said, a lot of places it's getting illegal now, but I mean, they would torture people. Basically they would use like torture tactics, you know, isolation, sleep deprivation, lights, sounds, noise, obviously things that will shock you or induce vomiting and different things like that. Now, I don't know if Rockford's was at that level or anything like that, but they did have a side where it was focused on turning you straight.
That's wild.
Yeah.
So you ultimately ended up getting kicked out.
Yeah.
What got you kicked out?
So I was emailing a student who was a first year and we weren't allowed to talk to them. And it was nothing sexual or like and nothing. It was literally like, we're two people who hate it here and we want to go home. But he was crazy, and I guess he was he had gotten in trouble for something, and they told him that they lied to him and told him, well, we need access to all your information or we're gonna kick you out. They still kicked him out. So he had to give them passwords to everything that he had, and so they went through his email account, and so they saw our emails, and so that's why I got kicked out through that.
So they saw your communication.
They saw our yeah. And I just couldn't. I was like, you gave them your password? And he was like, that boy has gone through it. I mean, because he was so lied to. Like, they told him, if you give me this information and you're honest, we're not going to kick you out. And they kicked him out.
Mm.
And they wouldn't. They told my roommate. They told me I wasn't allowed to talk to my roommates. My friend who was there, they told me I wasn't allowed to talk to her or
like
tell
before
her.
You got kicked out,
but like right after no, I wasn't allowed to tell anybody. I had to move out that day and leave. Obviously I lived 13 hours away. I was broke. I had no gas.
Yeah. What'd you do?
Call my parents. They lived overseas, and I think they sent me money to get home. My house was actually winterized and closed up because nobody was living there. So my very sinful friends from here went to my house when I was on my 13-hour drive, broke into my house, lit a fire in the fireplace, turned on my water, turned on my heat, and had a raging party for as soon as I drove into town.
Shout out to those friends.
Yeah, man. my house was cold. I mean, I got really, really sick. I ended up with, like, bronchitis because I was asleep. Like, there was no heat on the whole house for, a year or whatever, and it's in the middle of winter. I lived in Gouldsboro, so.
It's probably pretty cold.
Full of snow, really, really cold. And so, yeah, I just remember getting, like, so sick. And I think for me, the first, like, instance of I thought it was a cult was when I left and nobody was allowed to talk to me at all.
So, like, did the word cult, you just said it there, but, like, did you think that at all during any of these 2 years?
No.
Like, you didn't even think, like, oh, my God, maybe this is a cult. You didn't think that until
Until then. Really? And it was fleeting. Until then. Yeah.
Wow. Holy shit.
Yeah.
And I know also, too, you know, prior to coming on here, like you said, you haven't really spoken much publicly about this. Yeah, I have friends
that don't know that I went there.
Like, they don't know at all.
No.
They know nothing.
No.
So, like, when they hear this is going to be...
Yeah. They might
really. They know nothing. Like, not zero.
Nope.
Wow.
Yeah.
And is it just because, like, you weren't comfortable up until maybe this point talking about it?
It was super embarrassing to me for a really, really long time. People look at me and they think I'm, like, this really strong woman and powerful or whatever. Like, how do I say I fell for the okie doke, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they broke me down.
Yeah, yeah. But and now seeing the rise of, like, the nationalist evangelical movement, and that's what I was in. I mean, I used to go to Right to Life marches, you know, in D.C., you know, anti-abortion, anti-everything. And now so many people are getting that same brainwashing and kind of, and so I feel like there's nothing to be embarrassed about. And I know that I shouldn't have been anyway, but
it's part of the healing process.
And I think sometimes it's like, what do I even say? Like, where do I start?
Yeah. Where do you begin?
where do I begin? Yeah.
There's a lot to it. There's a lot to unpack. Yeah. Yeah, literally. I mean, there's so much.
Yeah.
Wow. That's unbelievable. But yeah, I mean, I like I said, you know, I said this before, but I think, you know, your friends, you know, that, you know, maybe some that are out, whether you've kept in contact with some or not, that maybe haven't spoken about it. I think, you know, by you sharing, you know, your experience and talking about it now, I think it'll give people a lot of,
hope. The feedback I've gotten has been insanely, insanely positive. It has. And I know that it's helping people. And I know even just me listening to other people go on different podcasts and talk about it helped me just listening to them. Cause one of the girls went on one and she ended up working there. So just hearing her talk, cause she's like, I know y'all, I came back like, and actually worked there. And, you know, and I was like, well, I wasn't that bad. So,
yeah,
but wow. Even, you know, so I think she was in it for like 5 years or something like that. And her regret was the way she ended up having to treat other people. Because my second year, you're in charge of the first years, you know? So you're putting that hate out, you know? You're beating people down.
So it's basically this big pyramid.
Yeah, right? And they tell you that you need to be torn down so you can be built back up like Jesus, you know? And you believe that. But I remember just having to, you know, well, you need to go tell them that they can't wear that. The girl is a big girl. Like, she don't have money for clothes. What am I supposed to do? Shame her for, like, you know, and it was just hard.
Wow. So after you returned home, like, what did you do? Like, what was your next move?
My family moved me to the Middle East with them. And I pretended like it never happened.
So, like, you didn't really even tell your family?
They knew, but I would never talk about it. Like, I told them what happened. I told them, like, why I was coming home. They didn't understand. And I know they didn't think I was lying, but they did not understand. And I said, I don't understand. To this day, I don't understand. I could not. You're like, Amber, there has to be. That's it. I don't know, you know. And so I was so hurt. And I don't think they had ever seen me like that. I've always been pretty much a confident person. I had no self-esteem. I had no self-worth. I didn't believe I could do anything.
And what year was that?
This was, 2016, 17, something like that.
Okay.
No, I graduated in 04. I went to school. So this was like 07, something like that or whatever. Yeah.
That was when you were out.
Yeah, I think I was out. Yeah.
07. Yeah. So, I mean, at that time, I mean, obviously,
technology, I was 21, all that, like, you know, so, and I was in a new country and gave me a new start, and I started college again and everything like that. But even so, there was a guy who I met, because I flew over there for Christmas break in my first year, and he had met me then. We hung out or whatever. When I came back after I got kicked out, he was like, "What happened to you?" He was like, "You were so assertive," and like, he was like, "You are a completely different person right now," you know? And this person had only known me like such a short amount of time, you know, and I was, and I locked it away and I kept it moving.
How do you feel about it now?
I think that I wish more people would talk about it, because the amount of hurt that a lot of us still have, and talking to people now and reaching out, and like I said, reading comments that people had on this post, I mean, it's bad. People are mad. People are angry. There's other stuff that happened to people that's so much worse. You know, there was this guy, and we were talking, and I wanted him to get on there, and he said yes originally, then came back and said no. And he was like, "I can't even tell you what happened to me." And I'm just like, you know, I lived in a dormitory, and there was other people who lived with people. So if you didn't have a lot of money, you didn't have the $6,000, say you only had $3,000. There were families who would sponsor people for Master's Convention. So you were like a rock star if you went to Master's in the area, in the church. Like, you're dedicating your life to Christ. That's so brave of you. I could never do that. So people like really revered you and looked up to you. And so these people who were in the church, they wanted to be adjacent to that. I sponsor a kid, you know, I'm their home opener. So you would go live with them. So they would have weekly meetings that they would rate you on how you were in the house. But you're living with strangers, and they, you know, the church is getting donor money, all this stuff. But I had a friend who was really abused by his home opener, and his home opener was gay, and I guess was trying not to be, and, you know, would come in his underwear, boners, you know, stashing porn under his bed and everything. And just, you know, people being sexually harassed, you know, physically abused. It was bad. And you can't talk about it, can't tell anybody, you know. And I even remember his situation. He was so afraid to tell anybody because he was gay. And so he didn't want them to think that he was gayer, you know, and all of this. And I remember once I got in a car accident in the parking lot of the church, and my roommate who was in the car was so scared of being late that she left me there at the accident because she had to go sign in. I ended up being late, but at this, I was hurt and like whatever. And they tried to get me in trouble for that. I was like, somebody literally T-boned my car. Like, I tried to go home. They said I couldn't go home, you know? And I wasn't even mad at her. I was like, you're so scared to be late, to sign in to this bullshit that we literally are in an accident. You probably need to like get seen or something. And you're so scared that you're leaving, you know? And I was just like, this is crazy.
Yeah. Pure craziness.
Yeah.
Pure craziness. Well, wow. I mean, I obviously expected some crazy horror stories, but yeah, like, you know, hearing it, you know, literally, this is not rehearsed. You know, we didn't even, you know, other than some messages back and forth, you know, there was, you know, you shared a couple little bullet point details, but nothing like everything you just shared for the last 40 minutes, you know? I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, I'm glad you're out, right? And, you know, do you have any other friends that are, you know, that you know, some of the other ones that maybe, you know, are out that you still communicate with?
Yeah,
And, like, how are they doing?
I think some of them honestly are not doing well. But a lot of people are trying to move on and heal. And I think right now the deconversion is really, really big right now. So I think a lot of people are finding.
How do you do that?
I think it's for different for everybody, but I think you have to talk about it. You have to go through it in your head and process it. And it was so traumatizing that I blacked out so much of that I, like, some of it I cannot even remember. Mm. Like, do you know who Zig Ziglar was?
Yeah, I know the name.
All right. So I totally forgot this. My girl, who I was texting this morning because I was having a panic attack, she was like, remember when we used to have to go to Zig Ziglar conferences and work? We worked them to make money for master's commission. We had to sell all the books, sell all that stuff. We drove for hours overnight, came near, and had to basically work for this person for free. You know, when we're selling all of this stuff that we obviously can't afford to people who can't afford to spend $5,000 on this whole book program that I'm pretty sure is bullshit. But yeah, here we are promoting. Why am I promoting this? Is this for Jesus? Like, that's shady, right? That was weird. I completely forgot that we did that multiple times. You know, because it's just such, everything is just there. They keep you moving so fast constantly. You do not have time to sit down and think and breathe and do anything.
To actually, like, try to process what's anything. Actually
yeah.
happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is wild.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Wow. I'm a little speechless, you know? Yeah, that's just unbelievable. And I know, obviously, it was such a long time ago, too. So, like, obviously, you know, like you said, besides like, having, you know, the blackouts, mm-hmm. right? Like, so, you know, for you having to recall, that's, like, number one, it's obviously probably emotional and difficult. But also, some of it, like, you probably almost just don't even remember. Like, until, yeah. like you said, until somebody says, like, hey, remember when we did this? Or, yeah. hey, remember that yeah. happened? And you're, like, and then part of you probably is even, like, did that even happen?
No, I got attacked by this girl and I don't remember, but multiple people,
like, physical.
Yeah. Remember what happened. And they said that, like, she had a demon. It was like this, oh my
God. Why'd she attack you?
I really, they were just like this prayer thing and people were like speaking in tongues and she was like speaking in tongues and she just jumped on me and started like scratching me and like had to get pulled off or whatever. And like, I have flashes kind of remembering and it just being scared of it, but I had multiple people tell me, actually one of the girls that went on my podcast, she was like, oh my, you don't Amber, like, she attacked you, and you know, and then she was the person driving the car that my roommate was killed in, so there, I think that whole thing was just, I was like, nope. You know, for it. But it was wild. There's a lot of stuff that just was a mess.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And even now, still, like, telling my mom things and I'm remembering her or being more open to talk about and stuff. And I told her, I said, I don't blame you. I don't feel like this isn't your fault, you know, but our parents' level of guilt for sending us there is huge. For the people who worked there, you know, for the people who left and started their own program and then got out of it and realized, like,
yeah,
how much damage did I do to the people who are underneath me? You know, how many people are sitting in a room right now talking about what I did to them?
Mm.
You know, and that's rough.
Yeah. How do you deal with it?
Try to be the best person I can be now, you know, and be humble enough to admit that I was really, really wrong. You know, and I made a mistake and that's it. There's some people that I owe apologies to that I've apologized to. And there's some people that I don't, you know, I don't know where they are or anything that I think back and I'm just like, you know, I remember I tried to be the nicest leader I could and not enforce everything that I could. But at the end of the day, I was still part of the program.
Yeah. You were being controlled by them. Yeah. And if you didn't do what they said, like, I mean,
it there was rolled downhill and they're in your ear. And I remember sometimes I'm like, listen, I am getting bitched at because you're not doing this.
Yeah, just please, like, do just, it so they can get, like, lay off. Yes, lay off, yes, all of us. Yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, again, like, it's almost like you're well, truly like a prisoner, mm-hmm. you know, mentally, physically, yeah. you know, and it's like, what do I need to do to, like, just stop the, you know, mental abuse, yeah. physical abuse? And it's just, like you said, at that time, like, you just have to do, you had to do what you had to do
to survive.
Yeah. It's truly survival.
There is a, another girl who was there. There wasn't a lot of black people and there was a lot of racism. That's a whole nother thing. But she apologized to me, and this was during COVID, And she said, I am so sorry because I believed everything you told me and I knew it was happening, but I had, she was brown. She was like, I had to do what I had to do because I had to get through,
mm-hmm.
you know? And because I remember going to her about, and I was like, are these, is there some like racism? Like, are some people, what's going on? And I was just totally gaslit and broke down. And just, I remember being so devastated by that conversation and been here talking to her after over messages and stuff. And I was like, you don't have anything to be sorry about. Now I get it, you know, but that's hard, you know? And she's like, I was just trying to keep my head down and not make waves and get through it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also think too, you know, hopefully this episode maybe reaches some of those people yeah. that, you know, maybe you have some guilt around for, you know, unfortunately the way that maybe, you know, you treated them yeah. because of, you know, how, you know, you were at that time. And hopefully they see this and they can hear your message.
I hope so.
Through the show and, yeah. Know that you're sincere because I know you are. And, yeah, I mean, I applaud you for being vulnerable about the whole thing,
yeah.
you know, and just, you know, saying like, hey, this is it. This is what it was. And it is what it is. Unfortunately, I'm not trying to downplay yeah, it whatsoever, yeah. but like, it's just like, what more can you say?
Right.
You know, like there's, you know, I mean, there's not really much more you could say other than like, hey, I'm sorry. I was wrong. This is it. And
yeah.
let's try to heal and move on from
yeah.
it, you know, as best as humanly possible. Right. Yeah. So I know we took up a ton of time about that, but I think it's all really important. And I mean, there's still a million other things. I feel like we're going to probably have a part two to this episode.
I'm down.
But, you know, I do want to touch because you have this book
yes.
That just recently came out. And I would feel super guilty if we didn't at least talk about this, you know, some more positivity in your yeah. life, you know, even though there might be some things in here that are difficult as well. But you know, you wrote this book, 72 Hours of Hell, you know, my time at the VA. So, you know, what's the book all about?
So, I am a vet and I did 8 years in the Navy. I ended up getting postpartum depression and obviously PTSD, and I didn't know. And so this book is me talking about it, kind of went down the rabbit hole, as I call it. So my journey kind of started with having postpartum depression. That was my first instance, like trying to go to get help. And then all the way to now me going and taking myself to the VA because I was having just such bad undiagnosed PTSD and anxiety and depression. And I couldn't leave my house. I couldn't, like, I would try to open my door and I would shake in a panic, just like, and it just got really, really bad. And I was like, I need to get some help. So this book is about my journey trying to figure out the VA and figure out my mental health and, you know, go from a diagnosis and try to be better. And also, like, talk about the process. And the VA sucks. 22 veterans die a day. It's an epidemic. Nobody cares. If you add in overdose deaths and everything, they say that number might be 44 a day. And we're losing people now. You know, they want to reinstate the draft and we're having more wars and a bunch of us could be recalled at any minute. And, you know, just dealing with the state of the world and the U.S. and how they tell us they support the troops, but you try to go to the VA to get help and to get benefits and you find out that was a lie. And so, you know, my book is my story about trying to deal with my mental health after the military, being a single parent, the best way that I could, and trying to share my journey with other people to know that, like, you don't have to kill yourself. You know, you can make it out of here, because sometimes you don't think you can. And a lot of us are just alive because of our kids. And, you know, we are efficient at killing ourselves. We're better at it. So, you know, sometimes we need a little bit more direct approach to us. But, you know, that's what it's about. Just as sharing my story. As soon as I got out, I voice noted the whole thing because I didn't want to forget.
Did you?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I didn't look back at it for like 6 months.
Like you just popped your phone open?
I popped it open and I just
kept
let it out. Yeah. Wow. And that's where the book came from.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So how long was it after that you recorded that?
I recorded that like as soon as I, like that night that I got home.
Like that day?
Yeah.
And then how long was it after that you didn't even like play
months,
it back?
Months. Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
So like, so when you finally decide like, hey, I'm going to put this in a book, like what was the light bulb moment for you? Like when you finally said to yourself, like where were you or when or what were you doing when you finally listened back to it? And then was it at that point that you're like, I'm going to put this in a book? Or did you think that before you listened back to it?
I think I was telling somebody about it or something. And I was like, you know, I should write this down. Like, because they were like, this is really going to help people. And I was like, really? You know? Mm-hmm. And I went back and I listened to it. And I was like, oh, God. And I felt this innate sense of obligation, drive. And I said, I have to do this. Like, my brother's going to hate this. There's this movie called The Family Stone, and there's this guy, she's telling a story, and this guy, they're looking at a totem. She's like, there's a story of this guy who went somewhere and he felt like he just had this hole in his heart and he didn't know what the hole was from. And he just like never built a totem before and just started building it because he felt like he had to do something to fill this hole. And as it's building it, and then finally when it's done, he felt like the hole was gone. And that's how I felt. I felt like there was this hole there, and I had to do this, and I didn't know why. Because I was like, I don't need to do this for me. Like, I already went through this, but I just felt like I had to. And I had no idea what I was doing at all. I'm a terrible speller. So, like, that, I was like, number one, why would anybody want me to write anything? And I just started Googling. And I figured out how to do this. I was in the middle of finishing my master's degree. And so I would be, you know, writing and trying to figure out everything between going to class and my internships. I think I still have that sense of being bored and having to always still be doing something all the time. And so I honestly, from the point where I said I wanted to write it to finish was really quick. I mean, it probably was over. I gave myself really hard deadlines. Chapter one, you get it 1 month, you know, set. And I found an editor. And of course, I sent it to my family to read it, to go through. I used Amazon Publishing, was able to do that. And like, you know, so check it out and read my story. And I know it's helped people. And I've talked to people who have read it, even people who weren't in the military, who just dealt with PTSD or depression, anxiety, postpartum, you know, it's
so it really could be for almost really anyone suffering from any type of mental health issue. Mm-hmm. Right.
Definitely.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's incredible. I mean, I'm just, for everything you've been through and then to be able to actually still put this down on a book in a book, I mean, you know, the amount I've never written a book but I've thought about it a million times. I feel like someday I will, but
you gotta do it.
I understand like the effort that it takes, you know, and kudos to you for, you know, even you said like, I'm a horrible speller. Like, you know, and like, so for somebody like you, it was even harder. Number one, there's trauma involved, right? You have to relive a lot of it. Mm-hmm. But like, hey, if you're not a good speller, like there's probably so much more to writing a book than most people realize. Yes. And you obviously you know that now. Right. And, but I mean, again, like it's not an easy task, mm-hmm. Especially if you're dealing with a trauma, even if it's may not be totally healed and you're trying to put it down to help other people.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so important.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I'm very proud of this. I honestly can't believe I did it.
Yeah.
You know, and people are like, how did you do it? You know, and I'm like, I had no idea how to do any of these things, guys.
But you just figured it out.
Everything I've ever done, I've just started with Google and gone from there. Like starting my own podcast and doing like, I didn't know, you know, how to do anything. And I think everything is so big, you got to make it small.
Yes.
And that's what I did. And I was like, all right,
take it in bite-sized pieces.
What am I going to call it? You know, what am I going to talk about? How long do I want it to be? Okay, what's this chapter going to be about? And I am totally a nerd, so I love like a full outline.
Structure.
Structure. I love a structured outline. Yep. And, you know, kind of start with from there, from deadlines, and just have yourself to structure it and to work on it.
So, people can obviously buy it on Amazon.
Yes.
Anywhere else?
No, it's on Amazon and Amazon Kindle.
Cool.
So I'm working on doing a audiobook.
Ah, yes.
Yes, that process I've started, and I'm like, oh God.
Yeah. Again, another big process, but you'll figure it out.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So before we end, like, where are you at now in terms of either religiously or spiritually? Where's your mind at now?
I don't know.
Discovery?
I have no idea. I mean, I don't want to be that person. So you go through phases. When you get out, you're an angry, what is it? When you don't believe in anything.
I don't know.
But why do I want to say Antichrist? That's literally not.
The word I'm blanking on too. It's, everybody's gonna be like, what's wrong with these people?
I know.
I know what you mean.
Yes.
Everybody that's listening actually knows what we mean.
Yeah, you know the word.
We'll think of it halfway through you
so
telling
you
your story.
So you start off like that, hating God, hating everybody, not believing anything. And then I moved on to kind of being agnostic, which is just you question, you're not really sure. And I think that's probably where I'm at right now is I don't know, you know, because I think that there has to be something other than this. We're so big. And I also think it's really selfish and weird to think that we're the only living beings in this whole universe. Like everything, the galaxy is so big, why would we just be the only ones here, you know? And I think that we're all a part of everything, and once you die, your body returns to the earth, and then you return to the atmosphere, and you return to the planet, and you know, and it's all, everything is made up of all these like tiny molecules of all of parts of us, you know. So
it's all energy.
And I don't know, you know, I don't know if there's anything out there that's bigger. But, you know, sometimes I feel like when you're doing something that you know you were made to do, and you watch somebody and you're like, somebody, that person was made to do that. You know, there can be God in that. You know, there can be God in looking at the mountains and the Poconos. You know, there can be God in me writing that book, and so many things. So I don't know what's out there, and I wonder and I want to discover, and I'm so open to learn, and I don't hate, you know, and I think there's room for everything. And I love reading about religions. I think religions personally like ruin people and different things, but I think it's important to, I've read through the Bible multiple times. I got through most of the Quran, you know, read about Buddhism, learn about meditation, learn about the roots of yoga, you know, just different things and figure it out. But I think for me, I just want to love people and help people and live my life in a way that will make people proud. And I do want to be a servant, and I want to serve people, and I want to help people. And I will always believe that we're supposed to help the poor and the orphans and the widows and feed the hungry and do all of that. And that's always what I'm going to do. And whether what I believe in, that's never going to change that.
Well, your story is impressive. You're impressive.
Thank you.
And, you know, again, I know I've already said, but, you know, thank you for coming on and being vulnerable and sharing all the things you did. I think it's going to really help a lot of people.
Oh, thank you.
I may get a cease and desist, but, but I'll tell you right now, I'm not taking the episode down.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it goes. And then maybe we'll do a part two.
Absolutely.
After we both, you know, get hit with a lawsuit.
Right.
That we could talk about it again, or maybe we won't be able to talk about it for a little bit, but then eventually we'll be able to talk about it. So how can people connect with you online? Like if anyone, obviously you can buy the book on Amazon, right? But otherwise, if somebody wants to connect with you personally, professionally, what do they need to do?
I'm under Amber Viola on all my social media, Instagram, Amber Viola, Amber_Viola. My podcast is called Politics But Make It Fashion. We have a Facebook page. We have a TikTok under Politics But Make Fashion, an Instagram page, Politics Make Fashion 1. I don't know who had the other one.
Yeah, screw that.
And then also, if you guys want to hear more about Master's Commission, I have a podcast called My Culty College. And that has my story as well as other people's stories who got out of it. And I will hopefully be adding more stories soon to it. And I hope that this episode brings out more people who would be willing to talk about it.
Yeah.
And send me a DM if you want to talk or chat or have any questions about anything. It definitely, my inbox is always open. It's a disaster, but
it's there.
But
it's
open. There.
It's so
open. Definitely.
Absolutely. And again, same thing here. If anybody can't reach you, or I'm sure they will be able to, but like if somebody's listening and can't find you for whatever reason, and if you try to reach me, I'll do my best to obviously connect you to Amber and Thank you again for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. And by the way, who did your hair?
Her name's Ashley Matos. She is on Facebook. She's amazing. She's local and she'll travel to you to do your hair.
Oh, that's so important.
Yes, it is very important. So
shout out to Ashley.
Yes.
For the hair.
She hooked me up. My head is sore though, but.
Yeah, but worth it.
Definitely.
I mean, it looks worth it. Anyway, it looks worth it over here. I mean, yeah. All right. Amber Viola on the Stacks in the MPP studio. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
If you want to see more On The Stacks content, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/onthestackspodcast or search the hashtag On The Stacks on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn.